Hello and welcome back once again to the Inquisitor podcast with me, Marcus Kauke. Today, my guest is Frank Bischkopf. Frank is a financial advisor, a wealth manager, and he works for 44 Financial. He's been around for quite some time. You'll hear from his accent that he's Swiss and that he also is going to be digging into sustainable investment. It's not a topic we've touched on before. I think it's an area that we should be interested in and exploring the pros and cons, the realities of it, and how the mass wealthy can invest in the same way that the truly rich do in order to get those same kind of returns. Frank is an advocate of investing for the whole life. And I think it's really important that if you're at a stage in life where you're considering investment, you consider the impact. So without any further ado, Frank, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
Excellent. Would you mind giving the audience a couple of minutes on your history, please?
I'm actually from Denmark. Ideology is pretty similar as far as that goes. So grew up in Denmark. You know, I loved seeing windmills in the landscape, and I didn't think too much about it, but I always thought of it as a good intersection of environmental stewardship, and eventually I learned, it could be a pretty good investment as well. And I thought it was like tranquility to see those like spinning on a like, nice summer day in the landscape. But eventually, I was a swimmer and got a scholarship offer to come to the U.S. and try that out for a bit. So I went to American University in Washington, D.C. and loved it there. Came for 1 year. One became two, became four, became more. Got my degree in economics and master's in financial economics, where like the finance portion was just really intriguing. And then after graduating, got a job in commercial real estate, which 2008 didn't serve well. So made a pivot towards wealth management and worked in various roles until finally landing on the shelf that I think I wanted all along. I just didn't know it. Working as a financial advisor and planner with individuals and having those conversations on a daily basis. And then about 5.5 years ago, I started my own firm to be able to support my clients at a high level and offer sustainable investing at the core offering. Now we'll get into a little bit more as to what that is, but it's an area, the more I learn about it, the more stronger I feel about it.
So what is sustainable investment? Because, you know, for a layperson, you're probably thinking that it means investing in green tech or green solutions. And there'll be all sorts of questions around returns and so on. So let's try and debunk some of those. So what is sustainable investment, first of all?
A name a lot of people use is ESG, but I think that has been misused a little bit by the financial industry. ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. And of course, those factors are a big part of sustainable investing, but it is investing in, as I see it, investing in a way that is sustainable for you as a person, hence creating a return, like financial stability, as well as the world we live in at a greater scale, at least not making it worse, hopefully making it better, and investing in companies and solutions that are aligned with the values you believe in. Top questions I get would be things like environmental factors, the carbon footprint, emissions, et cetera. Or like equality measures, whether it is gender-based or it is more diversity. DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion is a hot word these days. And there is a growing body of evidence that investing in companies that exhibit these factors actually long-term potentially could outperform because they just make smarter decisions. They take more mitigated risks, because they get a diversity of inputs as well in the decision-making process.
Well, the
so it's an interesting field that overlaps a lot of areas.
I was speaking to David Horn, and he's done quite a bit of research on this. Companies where they have at least one woman board director typically make 15% higher annual profits. Just one.
Yep.
Now, again, it's a generalization, but the fact is that without having diversity in an organization, you will tend to suffer from groupthink. Now, that's fine in a very narrow discipline that doesn't require creativity and it doesn't require adaptability. But as you're going into the next few years of what I suspect is going to be a high degree of volatility and uncertainty, you need to try and iron out those creases. And if we're not spending time really thinking through the impact of our decisions, one rule in life is that the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. If you talk about sustainability and being a good citizen, but then your investments are polluting the planet, there's a hypocrisy there. So again, I suspect this is going to be an interesting and challenging conversation for many people to listen to. So what moral compass do we have to bring to our investment if we're going to actually be stewards as opposed to being, you know, extractors, rent takers?
It starts with knowing who you are and what matters to you. And this, obviously, I have my personal opinions, but some clients have different focus points and try to customize around that as much as possible. But it is knowing what you stand for, first and foremost, knowing what's important to you. You show up at a meeting and you ask it, well, how are you invested? What are the values that went into the process? What's your relationship with those investments? And especially if you are in, say, involved in a charitable organization, and they ask you, are your money aligned with our mission? Because you're donating money to us, you are on our board, how are you invested? And having that, I guess, realization as far as is your money aligned? Do you walk the talk? Or are you greenwashing would come up in this conversation, where you do something just to look good, but do you actually do stuff to make a difference? And right. I think that's the importance. As far as what you're focused on, it can go in multiple directions. But knowing what you stand for is the first step.
As someone who essentially would much rather just put my money into something and believe that it's going to give me a return, I don't think I'm wildly different from most people when dealing with financial advisors, because I remember the few experiences that I have had. Most of them involve my mind going numb and my eyes glazing over because they talked to me about stuff that I didn't really understand. And when they did explain it to me, it was fairly clear that by the time we were done, I would still be no better or worse off in terms of my knowledge. I would have just spent an hour looking confused. So often finances scare people anyway, because we've got a lot of conditioning and emotional attachment to money and all the things that go with it. Certainly, I don't know what it's like in Denmark, but there's the old biblical phrase, the love of money is the root to all evil. The problem with that is we're conditioned to not see money as a tool, but as something that's rarefied or as something dirty. So let's spend a little bit of time talking about how people approach money and their relationship with it, their money concept. How does that affect how people invest?
Most people, as you said, avoid the conversation because they don't want to get involved. It's an area that is important because money infiltrates everything we do. But most grow up with limited knowledge, either because of lack of exposure, maybe their parents didn't feel comfortable. If they didn't feel like they knew, they didn't want to pass that on to the kids. And then you get your first job and you're supposed to know everything, like how to invest in your retirement assets. So it's an area where it's just a big gaping void as far as the knowledge goes. I have found that by involving values-based investing, you activate a different emotional response because so my money is invested like who I am. Great. Okay. And then you can always look at charts and tables and everything else from financial perspective is also important. But spending an hour looking at that, I don't think yields any measurable outcome. For most clients, as you said, they play it over. There are some, they love that stuff. You dive into it, and like, of course, that has to be done. It has to be financially sound. But the values-based overlay, I think, makes a huge difference. And then when you take that, I look at it as a three-prong approach. And then you do the planning itself. Like, okay, forecast. This is what you make. This is what you spend. This is what you have. This is where you want to go. And how do we get there? All of a sudden, you're painting a whole picture. It's like, okay, I know where I'm at. I know where I think I want to go. Life is not linear, so most people pivot at some point along the way. But having that framework, okay, this is what I'm trying to do. And then the financial, this is how to invest to get there based on a risk profile and all the quote-unquote boring traditional financial stuff. And then the overlay of the value space. But if you are, say, 30, 40 years old, retirement is a long ways away, and it may not have the same focus.
It really isn't. It's a blink.
It comes fast. Yeah. It comes really fast at you. If you align your money with who you are, that's an immediate or ongoing emotional return. Well, you don't necessarily look at the long-term retirement money because you feel like you're young and retirement is for old people. It's like, well, guess what? When you're retired, you still feel young, but it's too late to plan for it at that point. So like there's an emotional connection to the money, which means it's easier to stick to the plan if you feel the money has a positive vibe to it through the values you've assigned them. So that is one where it is hard to measure return on the emotional impact, but I have found it to be sizable. And the ones that buy into it, easier time sticking to the plan during turbulent times than the ones that are more focused on the return, where the emotions take over. There's plenty of research out there showing that retail investors, you know, like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, are terrible investors. They get the lowest return because emotions take over. You sell at the bottom, you buy at the peak, and you miss the difference in between. So if you can stick to the plan by working with someone who can kind of help you along the way, and you feel like you're on the right path, tend to end up ahead just by removing some of the emotional ballast or weight that a lot of people carry.
If we're going to make investments that fit with our values, we need to be informed. Now, again, how can we get informed so that we're not making investments that are basically greenwashing and we're making investments that do genuinely align with our values?
There are tools out there that help navigate that space where they look at beyond the annual report he has sent out. It is, which is a lot of storytelling, but looking at various resources, whether it's be governmental, nonprofit, corporate, various required like accounting measures. So there are data sources out there. Some of them you have to dive for a little bit. I use a couple in my work that try to look beyond just the surface of the company and looking at each holding, like what does this bring to the table, both as like looking at thousands of data points.
Can you give me an example of the sort of stuff that you're looking at?
It could be like fines for violating labor laws, which is something most companies tend to put maybe in a very tiny footnote, but it is public information that's out there. It could be the same with like resource use, and then looking at things like pretty much any data that is available that you can get into. It is a pretty deep topic.
As a retail investor, that sounds like a hell of a lot of work. Why would I go through that process?
Thankfully, a lot of these services kind of compile the information for you, but there is so much out there. The one I use has a really good free interface where they kind of rank an investment based. They give you a score, 0 to 100. I've seen them as low as 7 and as high as like 97.
Right.
And measuring across various factors, kind of like a weighted average of the score. Then you can dive into the areas you maybe feel stronger about. So it's out there. I know of 3 or 4 vendors come to mind that offer this. Some have a paywall you have to get through. Some offer like some free insights. One of the first ones to come out with a usable thing was the Morningstar with their Globe rating. They have their star rating as far as performance goes. They have a Globe rating for ESG factors. That one is out there. It's available. I don't think it's the best anymore, but new things have come out that looks much deeper at it. But I think it's a great place to start to at least familiarize yourself with it. And I think that's part of the answer too, is just to get started. Once you get started, you start learning and then you can improve.
How do I get started? If I was serious about sustainable investment, how do I get started? What's the starting block to begin with? And then
a good thing would be, again, assuming you have your asset allocation between stocks and bonds, the international emerging market, you have all that stuff figured out. You take a portion of one of those buckets and, okay, let me find an option for this portion. And it could be, let's say, US large cap stocks. That's the most chewed through as a class, the most options, and it's the most easily accessible information. And then you start like finding, maybe it's a mutual fund, it's an ETF, it could be individual stocks, but you start finding options that look good. You compile the list, you compare them in different parameters, which could be the impact, the performance, the cost, et cetera. And like find the one that, okay, this one, at least it doesn't smell bad like the old one. It may not, you know, have a rosy scent to it, but let's go for this one and put some money into that. And you start paying attention to how that does. And you start looking at, maybe this one could be a supplement to it or it could be a replacement. And then slowly you build. It's something that's with anything. You know, if you wanted to play cricket, you're not going to be on, you know, like the top team right away. You work your way up the ranks. Same thing here. You have to start and just start moving in the right direction.
Sensible.
And it is something that if you want to do it yourself, if you put the time and effort into it, once you start the process, you become better at it. You start seeing more things because it's piqued your interest. And then slowly the snowball goes and you start working with it. And for those that don't have the time, you know, you hire a financial advisor, but you interview them not on past performance, because past performance is no guarantee of future performance, but more on the process, on how do you go about choosing your investments? How do you screen them? How do you monitor them? Both from performance impact perspective. And that is where I think the most important thing, just to jump straight to that, if you're looking for an advisor, is to find someone you're comfortable with, where you can ask questions and expect to get the time to get a good answer back. Because most people, when they start this journey, don't want to ask the questions because they feel stupid, because it's an area they've done, they feel like they should know more about. But what are you supposed to know if you've never been told? Find someone with the right personality, someone who can educate you and work with you along the way to your level of desired involvement. And that would work for most folks.
Excellent. Good advice. Okay, so tell me this then. Impact investment, what is it? Because you hear about impact investors. Say, for example, Salesforce had an impact investor, but he seemed to come on to try and disrupt things and break the thing apart. So what's the difference between that kind of corporate raider and other impact investors?
It's all about definitions. The way I see impact investing is one where there's continuum between pure financial performance and the pure impact. And somewhere in the middle, like where pure impact may be more philanthropic in nature, where there's no financial return necessary, more like we want to make a change. An impact investor will be a little further into the continuum where you're still looking for a return, but you may have a different weighting as far as what's important to you. It could be you're willing to give up a little return to get a huge impact. It could be in, let's say, affordable housing, where like, you want to provide this housing, you want a level of return, but you're okay giving up a little bit at the margin. That's more like a true like impact investor.
Wow.
As I see it. Again, depending where you are on that continuum, you can get a return that is similar to broader market, but that has a profile that is more suitable for who you are. And especially if you're investing in the publicly traded securities, as most of us are, that is where most people land, because you do need sometimes significant assets to be more on the impact side, because they are not regulated in the same way. So and to avoid the regulation, they have higher barriers for entry. If you're in the middle of that continuum, you can kind of get both a return and a good profile where you're supporting the companies that are doing what you believe in. But someone who comes in, as you mentioned, more like a corporate raider, they're definitely an engaged shareholder, which is nice, but depends what sort of impact they're looking for. Let's put it that way.
One of the things that we said that we talk about is the difference between how the mass affluent invest versus how the truly wealthy invest. Can you start with, show us a contrast between the two? So what do the mass affluent typically do in terms of their investment? Let's start with that first.
Most don't really do much. A lot of people have the majority of the money in their retirement account through work or pension and have little say. They put it in there, every paycheck, money goes in, and they just invest in the default. Sometimes you don't have an option. Sometimes you just invest in whatever you're given. Most people don't pay attention to it. They don't feel like they have enough money to make any change or like spend the time on it. Most people don't even pay attention to it. That's a good start. On the other hand, you have the ultra high net worth with their family office where they can custom everything. People call them with amazing options. That part of the investment realm is done in non-listed securities, or it could be direct investments in real estate or like a variety of more like lump them in as alternative investments. Again, we have that spectrum between the two, where once you start paying attention, you can find more and more detailed investment options. Once again, as we talk about with impact investment, it's a journey. You start learning a little bit more and slowly moving towards more and more sophisticated products, if that is the right option for you. And you can get into, even for relative, not like the mass affluent, it's not for everyone, but it is for a larger subset of people than you would always think. You can get into more alternative options that have a totally different risk-reward profile than a stock you can buy on the stock exchange.
Such as?
It could be renewable energy infrastructure.
All right.
So,
okay.
Like investing in solar farms, wind farms, and with relatively, that's one of the nice things about developments in like fintech technologies that underpins their financial services. They have evolved so much over the past few years. Investment minimums used to be millions. Now they're measured in maybe tens of thousands instead of. So they become accessible to more people. If you know where to look and if you meet the hurdles that have also come down, that all of a sudden, you can, even without having unlimited wealth, you can start to invest in a way that is more similar to how the foundations invest. But it's a journey, and you have to get there. And it's not for everyone. it does come with slightly different profile, but it is out there. And again, to do that well, I would recommend not working with professionals. It is not all apples to apples. You can buy a mutual fund from pretty much anyone, and it's probably going to do what it's supposed to do. But once you get outside the mass market, it requires a little more due diligence and navigation. And that's where working with someone makes sense. Also, just purely access to information.
What are some of the more innovative and exciting sustainable investment strategies or products that have come out of recent years?
One thing is a lot of these options, even for not like the standalone, a mutual fund, an ETF, they have there a whole lot more options, and the cost has come down tremendously. It used to be relatively expensive to find. Sustainable investing used to be a tiny niche. Now it is a lot more mainstream. So the cost has come down as well. If there are more offers out there. One of the recent themes that I find really interesting is focused on DEI, where the portfolio is built around DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion measures. Because as we talk about, you get better decision-making, you take more better risks by having that diversity. But it is now something you can invest in funds that are tailored around those metrics. And I find that really interesting. There are others that are, it's more like thematic investments, where like, you can find one that is focused on renewable energy, one that is focused on organic foods, one that is focused on you name it. Some of them are, I would say, terrible investments in the way they're structured and the fees, where it's like, I love the idea, but they're not ready to come to market yet, whereas others are perfectly legit, but with anything, not what you buy.
Right. So for someone who's completely new to the market, what are the pitfalls that one should look for in terms of the structure and the fees? What are the questions that one should ask?
Know how you pay for it. Know what you pay. And there's definitely a price value. Sometimes it's okay to pay a little bit higher expense ratios for something that hits a certain spot in your portfolio. And sometimes the number one thing I look for is management. What is their process? How do they do things? And what are the pillars the foundation is built on? Because any investment will deviate from the benchmark over time if they take any meaningful deviation. Yeah, if you invest in, say, the S&P 500, you're going to get an S&P 500 return, but I'm not willing to pay a whole bunch for that as far as expenses go, because that's pretty simple. But if you deviate from the S&P 500, maybe because you're focused on DEI issues, performance will be different because you have a different investment portfolio. So good, bad, over time, it'll fluctuate, but probably mimic, depending on the time period you're looking at. But look at the process they have in place. Like read the various documents the funds put out as far as how they go about these things. And they tend to write like pretty nice. It may be a large legal document, but the commentary section is usually fun reading, like if you're interested in the topic.
Right. So what should one be looking for? What are the red flags that you should be looking for?
If you want them to take a stance on a topic, make sure they take a stance and they deviate from the benchmark. Otherwise, you might as well just buy the benchmark or like the index. So you want to see stability in management, that it's the same people, same ideology they're looking at. You want to see that they have clear options. And preferably, if you look back a little bit, sometimes you have to ask for it. But what they explain, like, okay, this is what worked well for this period. This is what did not work well. And that they have reasonable argument and they don't like, oh, this didn't work well. So we're changing our idea to chase the latest fad. You want someone who does what they say they're going to do. Someone who walks the talk. And once you read one or two of these, you find the ones that Like just good, reasonable arguments. And someone you where you feel comfortable that they will make the decisions the right way based on what they say they're going to do. And they can underperform at any given time. That's the nature of investment. But they may outperform the next. And that's especially some of the newer funds that have less of a track record. You have to trust the process more. Where the funds that have been around for a long time, you can see their performance. And they tend to, any given time period, they over or underperformed. So look at it over various intervals. And like maybe there was a period of stress. Maybe you look at, well, how did this fund handle when COVID first came out? And like the world went crazy for like a few weeks until it settled a little bit. And then it was the long drag to get out of it again. But how did those shocks affect the performance compared to what there was it's supposed to be measured against? It does require a little homework.
Okay. So if we look at how wealthy investors invest, then let's contrast with that. Explain to me what their time horizon is, their risk appetites, you know, the things that they look for that your average investor doesn't.
Their time horizon tends to be much longer, and their risk willingness and risk appetite. Their willingness tends to be a little higher, but their appetite, not necessarily. They want to be compensated for the risks, and they know to ask for that. And diversification is your friend. If you have a variety of different, that's why you don't put everything in one, just in one basket. So having that diversity of options likely reduces your overall risk by taking what is potentially a standalone higher risk, but put together, they balance each other out. And so your risk actually lowers. But some of them require a long time horizon. And if you have more like an endowment style money, you are much more willing to take individual risks compared to without jeopardizing your whole portfolio. The typical retail investor sometimes get caught up in emotions. And that's the key to try to avoid that and keep process and focus on what is it I'm trying to accomplish. But if you look at generational wealth, like multi-generational wealth, your time horizon is not your own retirement. It's that retirement of your grandkids. So that changes things.
We're going to have to wrap up now. But on the basis of that, it sounds like there's a threshold where you can eventually afford to start taking these decisions without it feeling like it's going to hurt. So at what level do you typically find people move from traditional investments into sustainable investments where they feel like this is a risk worth taking?
Once you learn enough about it, I don't think that sustainable investing does not carry additional risk. But it is more like when you know who you are, when your kids are kind of out of the house and you can pay a little attention to yourself, that tends to be a good spot for where people make the switch. Nowadays, kids feel strongly about certain things, or younger folks, millennials, whatever label you put them, have stronger opinions earlier on in their adult life than many that are in their maybe prime earning years nowadays. But it tends to be the focus switches to where as to what's important. Kind of that, let's call it around 50 for a lot of folks. It could be, you know, for some people it's 20, for some people it's never. But that kind of middle life where you start focusing on yourself, you have built some money, you want to protect, you want to grow further to help sustain the rest of your life. And that's where I find a lot of people start paying attention to it. It's been available all along, but it is, as we talked about earlier, once you know who you are, you can start to align with it and then take the appropriate risks. But any investment by definition is risky. So it's a matter of building the budget.
Excellent. Frank, thank you very much. Very interesting. How can people get a hold of you?
Easiest way is to go to my website at 44financial.com. It's spelled out F-O-R-T-Y, the number 4, financial.com. Or send me an email at frank@44financial.com. And then I can talk about this topic for quite a while. So if happy to dive in and kind of bring people up to speed a little bit. If you want a view, I have a little hack questionnaire, like which is more like a personality test as far as investing goes as to what's important. And then we can measure that up against how are you invested? Like, is there congruence here or is there room for improvement? I'm happy to go into that one with any of your listeners, because I do think that is a really interesting topic.
Lovely. Frank Bischoff, thank you.
Thank you so much, Marcus.
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot, Frank.